Hey there, everybody. Welcome in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. Today's episode of Locked On Orioles is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market. Save $10 off your first order of Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and enter the code Locked On. Today's episode, we have a really exciting guest, a former player in the Orioles minor league system, and a former player at Bowling Green, as we are going to be joined here on the pod today by Jeff Hundley, who had an eight-year minor league career with the Angels, Brewers, and Orioles, and also played at Bowling Green in the late 90s. And the reason we talked to Jeff today is not just because he spent 2 years with the Bowie Bay Sox in 2004 and 2005, but also because of the news that's been coming out of Division I college baseball this week, in which two Division I programs have cut their baseball teams because of lack of funding due to this COVID-19 pandemic. And it had been talked about a lot that, you know, a lot of mid-major schools and programs below football and basketball may have to be cut. And it's happening outside of baseball as well around the country, track, cross country, swimming, different programs like that, lacrosse as well being cut at different schools. The two that have cut baseball so far, Furman down in South Carolina and then Bowling Green up in Ohio. And the two schools have cut the baseball programs, and two programs that have had baseball success at the D1 level in the past. So wanted to bring on Jeff Hundley. Now, he's not the only Bowling Green baseball player who has been connected with the Orioles. In fact, Roger McDowell played his collegiate baseball at Bowling Green, the former Orioles pitching coach, and Nolan Reimold also played at Bowling Green, a longtime Oriole, of course, ending his major league career back in 2016. But of course, Orioles fans know Reimold very well. He's another guy currently in the bigs, John Birdie, who is an outfielder for the Miami Marlins, Bowling Green guy. And also, Orioles fans may know Burke Badenhop, longtime reliever for the Tampa Bay Rays. He was in the bigs from 08 to 2015. Just a short list of the many guys who have played in the big leagues from Bowling Green, and a long, long list of guys who have gone through the minors from Bowling Green baseball. But today we're going to talk to Jeff Hundley, a left-handed pitcher out of Bowling Green, Ohio native who went to play for the Falcons and then was drafted by the Angels in the seventh round in 98 and spent a good amount of time in the Angels system, then the Milwaukee system, then again ended his career in the Orioles system. We talked to him about a lot of things about Bowling Green baseball, what he and other alumni are trying to do to save the program. We talk about his time in the minors, his time with the Orioles as well, and just a really good conversation here with the former Orioles minor leaguer and Bowling Green Falcon, Jeff Hundley. Jeff, thank you so much for taking some time and joining us on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Connor.
And so I brought you on for a couple reasons, obviously being in the Orioles system at the end of your career, but also playing at Bowling Green. And of course, the news coming out this week with Bowling Green being the second of the NCAA Division I baseball teams, including Furman as well, to cut the baseball program due to a lack of funding or other reasons surrounding COVID-19 right now. So, you know, not to start off on a sour note, but what was kind of your first reaction when you heard the news that Bowling Green was going to be shutting down the baseball program?
Yeah, it was definitely a gut punch at first. You know, at Bowling Green, baseball had survived, you know, a long time with reduced funding and things like that. And with very minimal communication, you know, the announcement was made. I mean, very minimal communication with the alumni and, you know, the current coaching staff. I mean, they had very little time to notify players and families of the players there currently. So it was all, you know, quite a big surprise to all of us in the Bowling Green baseball family.
Yeah, were there when you heard it and you said, you know, without a lot of heads up, was there a lot of reaching out to former teammates and people in the program, just everybody trying to gather their thoughts after the news?
Oh, absolutely. We've started a huge campaign to raise money to, you know, sustain the program, and we've done it in very short order. We've had 3 calls now of all the alumni around the country. And as of a couple of days ago, we had already raised, almost $900,000 to hopefully boost the program. We started an email address that, you know, anyone that wants to, you know, contact us, you know, commit some money. It's savebgsubaseball1@gmail.com. So the outpouring of the family and, you know, just, you know, the grittiness, the blue collar nature of BGSU baseball really, really came through in very short order to get this thing going. So that part was good.
Yeah. Through doing that, has it seemed like, you know, and obviously money is the number one issue, but has it seemed like the school and the athletic department, with that funding would be open to using it to bring it back, you know, if you guys are able to continue to meet that goal to try and get the program back?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the goal. We knew we needed, you know, to act very quickly. I mean, there are, you know, 30 players in the transfer portal now, and, you know, there's some very talented kids on that team, very talented kids that are committed to come in, you know, in the next year. So we knew we needed to act quickly to raise money and maybe get it back, you know, alive again very soon, so we don't lose the members of our family to other schools. So that was the goal. We knew that we needed to raise money to at least get a seat at the table and present this to the athletic director and, you know, the president of the university.
Yeah, and when people hear, you know, that number that you had mentioned, and the large outpouring and the large alumni base, you know, maybe right now in the college baseball scene, people may not think right to Bowling Green, but in the history of the program and all the players who have come through and made it to the minors and made it to the majors, there's a long mm-hmm. list of guys, and obviously Oral Hershiser sits at the top of that list of uh-huh. the Bowling Green alumni. But for you back in the 90s, you know, choosing a school, and obviously it was closer to home, but did that play a part in it, knowing, you know, this program had success, and also you had seen people like Oral make it to the big leagues and be incredibly successful coming out of that program?
Yeah, my classmates, my teammates, you know, we joke about it now. What is seemingly important to kids now was not on our radar 25 years ago when we were looking for a school. What was important to me at the time was just that sense of family. The coach Danny Schmitz, he's just put in 30 years at Bowling Green baseball. It started in 91. It was a sense of family to me, like being wanted, being a part of a family, being a part of a brotherhood there, that really attracted me to the university. They had a great indoor facility because, you know, the weather is not great in Northwest Ohio. To start the year, I knew I would love an indoor facility to be able to practice in the winter, but it was that sense of family over there that really drew me to the program, you know, and it's still around today. I mean, as the kids cleaned out their lockers, the current team, there were 40 alumni there to support them and to support the coaches. I mean, people that drove hours and hours to support, you know, that team is why I chose Bowling Green in the first place. That sense of family and brotherhood.
Yeah, and for a lot of programs as well, it can be that sense of family. But I think especially for you and the people around you on the teams you played in, you know, you guys got to go to an NCAA regional in your final season in 98, and they went back in 99. So, you know, how much do you think back to those days? I know you guys went down to Miami for the regional, and those were some pretty good teams in the MAC back in the late 90s.
Yeah, that was, you know, what was even more special about that 98 and, you know, and then the 99 team, we had underachieved in 96 and 97. And we all stuck together. And to come back after underachieving for 2 years, to stick with it, and then to go on and make a run at a championship and then go to a regional, that sense of, you know, crawling through a tunnel and then coming out, you know, on top was a really, it solidified a lot of friendships that are lifelong. And to be able to win after going through what we went through was, you know, something really special. And, you know, I'm very grateful that I had that opportunity to do that.
So after that, you get picked in the 98 draft in the 7th round by the Angels that season. And, you know, you're coming from the Midwest, from Ohio, and you pretty quickly made it up to double A and triple A in a couple years. Even besides the baseball, you know, what was it like to be an Ohio kid and drafted by a California team and get out there for some of those leagues out on the West Coast?
Oh, yeah, that was, you're definitely at a disadvantage being an Ohio kid, a Midwest kid. I mean, for 7 spring trainings, I would go down there and it'd be the first time I'm putting on my spikes. I'm throwing, you know, I worked out with the Bowling Green baseball team, you know, trained with them, and I would wear turf shoes on a turf mound throwing indoors, and I'd go down to spring training in March, and it'd be the first time I'm outside on a dirt mound. And it just takes a lot longer to get used to that. And I'm at a disadvantage for sure, not being from Georgia, Texas, Florida, you know, Southern California, Arizona, where they can be pitching outside, you know, year round pretty much. But yeah, and then, you know, going out to California, playing in Southern California, you know, it was just such a great experience. I hadn't really spent a lot of time out in the West Coast, so to be able to get to spend parts of 3 years in the California League was pretty awesome, to get to basically see that whole state. And to make it up to double A and triple A that quickly, you know, was also a great opportunity, because I got to go to Edmonton, Canada, Salt Lake City, you know, some great parts of the country and Canada that I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do that otherwise, if it hadn't been for baseball and getting drafted by, you know, a West Coast team.
Yeah, so you grinded your way through the minor leagues, 98 until 02 with the Angels system, then a year with the Brewers, and then you end up in the Orioles system and here in Maryland, where I'm at, in Bowie for a couple of seasons. So what went into that? How did you end up in Bowie for those final 2 years, and what was your experience like in the Orioles system?
Oh, the Orioles system was great. I met a lot of great people over there. They gave me a shot, which, you know, as always be thankful for that, for them giving me a shot. You know, it was able to me to sustain my career in Bowie. I mean, I remember playing on the road in Bowie and, you know, really, you know, liking their stadium and, you know, the fans there. I think I played on the 4th of July there in like 2000 when I was on the road. So to be able to get there, to be my home city in 2004, just a great group of people in that city, and they really support their players there. That part really stands out. I still have my Bowie Bay Sox Booster Club travel bag that they gave all the players, and that's still my go-to weekend bag when, you know, I do some weekend traveling. So just a little things of being at Bowie, you know, really made it special. You know, Easter Sunday dinners, you know, potluck, a bunch of families would, you know, bring food in, and we'd have a kind of like a dinner up in the, you know, press box area up there in Bowie. So it was a really special place, and I still keep in touch with a couple of guys on the team that I really got to bond with, you know, Val Majewski and Mike Huggins are two great guys that I still keep in touch with.
And for someone who, you know, spent 8 years in the minor leagues, and you were at a lot of different levels and did play for a lot of different minor league teams, you know, you just talked about there the friendships you make and the guys you keep those relationships with. But on the other side, you know, you must have been able to see a lot of great baseball, a lot of great players, and some guys who went up to the big leagues. Are there guys who you remember crossing paths with who ended up in the bigs? And is there anybody who you remember playing against in the minors and thinking, you know, this guy is going to be a good big leaguer pretty soon?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first one that really sticks out to me, like you mentioned before, I was drafted in 98, played rookie ball. Then I played a full season of low A in 99. In 2000, I jumped right up to triple A. So it was, you know, a rude awakening for me, just how good those hitters were. But I remember pitching on the road in Salt Lake City. That was the Twins at the time. And they had Todd Walker and a center fielder that turned out to be pretty good. I remember it's an elevated, you know, city in Salt Lake, so the field has to be pretty large to keep those balls in the ballpark. I think it's 410, 420 to center, and the ball goes out into left center, and I see the center fielder run it down. It looked like a triple. He ran it down like it was nothing, and it was Torrey Hunter. And I was like, and I remember thinking to myself, if that guy's on this field, I do not belong on this field. I mean, he was so good. And then I was like, how is this guy still in the minor leagues? He is unbelievable. And, you know, it turns out he's a 15-year big leaguer and, you know, really good guy with a smile on his face. But, you know, he sticks out. You know, Ryan Howard was in the Eastern League when I was at Bowie, and he was at Reading with the Phillies. So they were in our division. We got to face them all of the time. They were in our division. And, you know, me being a left-handed pitcher coming out of the bullpen, I had to face him 20 times probably. And he was just, I mean, I think he had 40-some home runs that year. He really stood out. And then, you know, I think he was rookie of the year and, you know, year after year an all-star. So those two guys stuck out for me as being just, you know, unbelievable players that I had the privilege of playing against.
Now, as a lefty reliever, did you have success against Howard, or was there anybody else who – did end up making it to the bigs that you distinctly remember having some success against in the minors?
No, I actually did. I don't know how it I remember pitching. I had to pitch against him so many times, and I had a lot of success against him. I think he was still working, trying to figure out how to hit left-handed pitchers. But he did square. He never got a hit off of me, but he did hit an absolute rocket. And luckily, he hit it right at our left fielder. He didn't even have to move, but, I mean, he hit it at 110 miles an hour off the bat. But, yeah, I did have some success against him. And, you know, luckily at the time, he just could not figure out left-handed pitchers. But he clearly made an adjustment once he got up to the big leagues.
So you look back on your 8 years in the minors and the little bit of time in indie ball as well, and as you said, you know, a couple trips to triple A and a lot of time in double A. You know, do you look back on it and have any regrets about, you know, maybe doing something different and not getting up to the bigs, or do you feel like, you know, it was just an enjoyable baseball time in your life to be able to spend that much time in pro ball?
I have no regrets at all. I know I gave it 100%. And if I had to do anything different, I wouldn't. I tried as hard as I could. I worked as hard as I could, and I'm 100%, you know, at peace with that. I knew back when I was 18, 19 years old that I never wanted to be my age now, 43 years old, and look in the mirror and ask myself, what if? You know, what if I would have worked harder? What if I would have put more time in? What if I would have taken care of myself, ate better? And I can honestly look at myself in the mirror and know 100% that I put everything I could into it. So I look back at it as just a great experience. I got to meet a lot of great people. I got to see a lot of this country, just about all of it. And, you know, I look at it totally blessed and fortunate to have even had that opportunity. And that's why, you know, going back to the beginning of the podcast, when I think about Bowling Green baseball being cut, that's 30 less opportunities for kids to play the sport and to have that opportunity. And that's another thing that's so sad about, you know, Furman and Bowling Green baseball getting cut. Now that's 60 less opportunities for Division I athletes to go and play this great sport. And that makes me sad. So I, you know, to answer your question, I feel 100% blessed that I was able to play as long as I did. because it is a special game. And so, yeah, I feel 100% blessed and fortunate to have played everywhere I played and have had those opportunities. And it's unfortunate that, you know, opportunities are being lost now.
Yeah, and you mentioned Bowling Green again, and it's obviously about the opportunities to play in college and potentially play at the next level. But it's also, you know, all the support staff around the program as well. And that brings me to my next question. You know, people think, you know, about guys who had these 8 to 10 year minor league careers like you did, but maybe don't think about, you know, then what comes next when, you know, you're around age 30 and you're back into the workforce basically. So how did Bowling Green and the connections there and being able to go back there help you, you know, with the next phase of your career in the last 15 years?
I mean, Bowling Green had been, you know, great to me. When I was done playing, I went right from the field to grad school there. And the connections I had made as a baseball player there, one of the professors was doing some research, and he's a, you know, PhD, and his interest was in baseball pitching biomechanics and my being a pitcher. And I got the opportunity to get my master's degree there, study baseball pitching biomechanics. And so I ended up getting my master's at Bowling Green also. So just that connection at Bowling Green helped launch my professional career. And I was basically 30 years old before I had a real job. And, you know, so I could not have done it without, you know, Bowling Green being there and getting me 2 degrees and being supportive of me.
And so at Bowling Green, you know, what we mentioned at the top, you know, it's not just Oral Hershiser as well, guys that Orioles fans would definitely know. Nolan Reimold, who had such a solid career with the Orioles, Roger McDowell, who's been involved with the Orioles during and after his playing days, guys like Burke Badenhop and John Birdie, who's in the big leagues now. A lot of big leaguers and a lot of minor league players come through that program, as Jeff has talked about trying to raise the money to get that program back. So the last thing, Jeff, before I let you go, you know, you've done it already throughout this conversation, but I wanted to give you one last opportunity, kind of make that pitch for Bowling Green baseball. And even if somebody's listening and wants to contribute to what you guys are doing to try and bring the program back, what would you tell them?
Well, I mean, it's opportunity for kids to be able to play baseball and go through that experience of playing a college sport. You know, it's not unique to Bowling Green. It just hits home for me. I have a 9-year-old son that plays baseball, and I want him to have those opportunities if they're there, if that's what he wants to do. And it's just so sad to see all these, you know, programs starting to get dropped because of lack of funding. And, you know, Bowling Green has been so good to me and a number of other, you know, minor league and big league players that, you know, we are definitely asking for help. And I think this is going to be the model of the future, privately funding, or, you know, at least partially privately funding a lot of these non-revenue sports. And to do that for Bowling Green, all you have to do is email savebgsubaseball, @gmail.com. And, you know, connect with us, you know, commit to, you know, give some money and save the program so we can have opportunities for my kids, your kids, and the current players there. It's a great family. It's a great atmosphere. And, you know, we need to keep these opportunities for our kids and for the future of the game.
And the hope is obviously that we can get Bowling Green baseball back and the cuts to the programs can maybe come to a stop around the country as well. But Jeff, thank you so much for giving me some time today, talking about your career and talking about the program that helped get you where you are today. I hope you and your family are staying safe, and thanks again for joining me today.
Thank you, Connor. I really appreciate being on here.
All right, everybody. I want to tell you about Built Bar. It's, first of all, the best tasting bar. It's hard to explain it until you really taste one, experience it. Real chocolate, amazing flavors. You know, you eat it and you're kind of thinking about that, protein bar taste maybe that a lot of bars have. Not really the case here with Built Bar. No aftertaste, just tastes good. It kind of feels like eating a candy bar, really. You get those chocolate flavors, the peanut butter, the caramel, everything you want in a dessert, but it's a protein bar. It's an amazing combination, low calorie, high protein, low sugar, none of those crazy additives. And if you compare it to the most popular men's bar, protein bar, it has half the calories, seven times fewer the carbs, seven times fewer the grams of sugar, and it's got more protein as well. It's really crazy. How can it be that good for you? And also taste that good. But if you head to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you can get $10 off your first box at www.builtbar.com. Just go to builtbar.com, look around. You can build a box. You can add all the different flavors to it. There's plenty of different flavors. Nut-free bars as well out of a nut-free facility. So really good with the allergies as well. But again, go to builtbar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first box of Built Bar. So again, our thanks to Jeff Hundley for joining us on the pod today. A really good conversation about his minor league career, his time in the Orioles organization with Bowling Green as well, and then, of course, what him and a lot of other Bowling Green, formerly known as Bowling Green State, alumni are doing to try and save their Division I baseball program. Again, he mentioned the email address you can get in contact with to contribute. We will put that email in the notes section in the description of this episode of the pod. So if you would like to help out the program or get more information, you can head over there as well. But I think, you know, a couple of the most interesting things he talked about, the fact that they had already really, in less than a week now, raised $900,000, almost $1 million, to try and save this Bowling Green program. And of course, a program that has produced some great players, and we talked about with Jeff, you know, made the back-to-back NCAA tournaments in 98 and 99 when he was there as a lefty on the hill for the Falcons, and just a great thing they're doing to try and bring that program back as well, because what he talked about, you know, all the opportunities it can bring. And then some good stories from the minors as well, you know, talking about his time with the Orioles and Bowie at the end of his career, how they gave him a chance. But I think that Torrey Hunter's story, pretty good too. You know, you see guys do things on a baseball field that you haven't seen much at that level, and Jeff at that point knew that guy wasn't too far from the big leagues, and as he said, you know, 15 plus years in the majors for one of the great outfielders in Torrey Hunter. But a really good conversation today with Jeff. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you are listening to the pod right now. If you give us a rating and a review as well, post in the comments, that really, really helps out the pod moving forward. One last thing before we go, little Orioles KBO update here on a Friday afternoon. Earlier today, Hyunsoo Kim and our LG Twins with a 6-5 win earlier today over the KT Wiz to open up a three-game set against the Wiz. The Twins entered the ninth trailing 5-4. They got two runs, and our buddy Hyunsoo Kim walks it off with a walk-off single in the bottom of the ninth to win it 6-5 for the LG Twins, who now sit just two games back of the first place NC Dinos. They are in third right now, are the Twins. But that'll do it for this week here on the pod. Bryce Patterick will join us next week on Monday. He's the host of Locked On Rangers. We'll do a little Orioles-Rangers talk about the Chris Davis, Koji Uehara, Tommy Hunter trade from 2011, and talk about Hanser Alberto, Renato Nunez as well, who the Orioles got on waivers from the Rangers, and then a little general Texas Rangers 2020 talk as well. That will be Monday's episode. But until then, this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Maybe next up, tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Locked On MLB.